As a person studies through the New Testament, I think it would be very difficult not to be impressed with the Apostle Paul, though I know some may be. But when you study the New Testament and you begin to read about this man Paul, you begin to read about what kind of individual he was, you begin to realize that he is a special individual. Paul's life seems so excellent in regard to morals. He just seems so excellent. And I'm confident that his moral excellence is the result of his spiritual endeavor, or spirituality. That Paul was a deeply spiritual man. He was a man that had a commitment to the Lord. And Paul had such a focus about him, such a clearly defined passion that just goes beyond description. It's a passion that just goes in one direction. And through his writings, he stirs us. He stirs us to imitate him. He stirs us to follow him as he follows Jesus Christ. And I feel confident that most of us who read his writings, most of us in this place would feel this way about Paul. The stirring, the encouragement that we get from reading his letters and from reading about his life. In his second letter to the Corinthians, Paul pulls back the curtain of his heart. He pulls back the curtain of his heart to reveal himself. He reveals his pain. He reveals his anxiety. He reveals his anxiety and his perplexity. And all this has to do with the preaching of the gospel. He experienced all these various emotions that we often do not realize a man of his caliber feels. But he had anxiety and he had pain and he had perplexity while he strove to fulfill his mission as an apostle of Jesus Christ. Even his letter to his close friends at Philippi does not bear out the heart of Paul as clearly as 2 Corinthians does. It's just unique among the letters that Paul has written. Because in this letter, much is revealed about him that is not revealed in other places. For example, his intense love, not for just his own people, the Jews that he grew up with and the family of Abraham, but for all men. He loved all men. He had an intense passion for men and women all over the world, and he wanted them to hear the gospel. He had a love that just drove him to go from one place to another place, to foreign lands, to hostile cities, so that all men would have a chance to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. And his feet were restless because everywhere he went, he was looking for new places where the gospel had never been preached before. And Paul talks about this intense desire he had in this particular epistle. When it comes to the 11th chapter, Paul makes a defense of himself against certain enemies. People had come into Corinth who were denying that Paul was a real apostle, who were saying that Paul was only a wannabe, a pretender. And Paul makes a defense for himself beginning in the 11th chapter. Now, Paul was not really concerned about what they said about him. They were trying to minimize Paul. They were trying to drive a wedge of separation between himself and the Corinthians. And Paul, though it would hurt him had this happened, he was not really as concerned about this wedge that would divide him from the others as much as he was about what these men were trying to get the Corinthians to do with Paul's message. You see, once these false teachers, these false apostles had gotten in and had divided them from Paul and said, well, he's just not a real apostle, then they would have the foot in the door to get these Corinthians to think that maybe Paul's message was not real either. That maybe Paul's message was not a real gospel. And that is what bothered Paul so much. And that is what would bother any good gospel preacher more than anything else. Whether or not people like him or not is really not the issue for somebody who loves the gospel. The issue is, do people still love the gospel whether they love you or not? And Paul was concerned because the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, and there is only one gospel that can save a man, and that's the gospel that was proclaimed by Paul. And so he has to make a defense of himself because he knows what the outcome will be if they achieve their goal. In making his defense against these deceitful workers, as Paul calls them, Paul takes an unusual approach. An approach that he doesn't normally take whenever he's writing a book like Galatians or a book like Romans, when he approaches the subject kind of as a theologian. And he presents his case very carefully and very clearly, making very, very wise and very, very unanswerable arguments. When he comes to the Corinthian letter, he makes arguments that he himself considers foolish. Foolish arguments, he calls them. He makes weak arguments in his defense. And the way what he does, and the reason he does this, is because that's the kind of arguments these false teachers were making. You see, these false teachers were talking about their credentials. They were talking about their pedigree. They were talking about all the things they had done, and they were trying to compare what they had done with what Paul had done. And so Paul, because the Corinthians had been impressed by this, you know, I mean, they were like little children when they have a bunch of fake jewelry dangled before their eyes. They go, oh, this is great, marvelous. Paul sees this and sees they are enamored by these kind of things, so he just follows suit. And he apologizes before he even does it and says, bear with me in my foolishness. But he goes forth. And Paul talks about his pedigree. Paul talks about his lineage. He says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 22, are they Hebrews? Are they Hebrews, he says? Well, so am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they descendants of Abraham? So am I. And he's matched them one for one. I'm everything they are in this regard. And he then talks about his scars. His scars. About his persecutions. About his perils. About all the pressures that were upon him because he was an apostle. Look at the word of the 2 Corinthians beginning of verse 11, or chapter 11, verse 23. When he goes further and he says, and let's take up the reading in verse 23, are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I've more so. In far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death, 5 times I received from the Jews 39 lashes, 3 times I was beaten with rods, 1 I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I have spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from many of my countrymen, danger from the Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger in the sea, danger among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Apart from such external things, there is a daily pressure on me concerning all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? You know, there's not a list. There's not a list of suffering experiences in the entire New Testament that can match what Paul just wrote here, except, of course, what Jesus went through for the sins of the world, what Jesus went through for the salvation of mankind. But Paul talks about these things because that's what the Corinthians seem to be impressed with. And then in chapter 11, he goes on and talks about religious experiences. You know how people like to talk about their religious experience? What has happened to me? You know, they've already talked about these other things, about me over here, and now he's talking about me again. My religious experiences. Apparently these men have had religious experiences, and Paul said, well, I have too. And here am I. He says, beginning in verse 1, he says, boasting is necessary, though it is not profitable, but I go on to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know, or out of the body I do not know, God knows, such a man was caught up to the third heaven. And I know how such a man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, God knows, was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words which a man is not permitted to speak. Paul was caught up into paradise, he says. He was caught up into paradise in the third heaven. And there he heard things, inexpressible words, he says. These are words that no man was allowed to repeat because they were such lofty and holy words. He had this experience that no man was allowed to tell about. Paul was not allowed to tell about. He could say, I had this experience, but he couldn't tell the content. And this is strange, because Paul had had many revelations and would have other revelations. The greatest revelation he ever had was when he saw the Lord on the road to Damascus, and he finally understood who he was. And then he had revelations concerning the gospel. Paul himself declared, he said, I didn't learn what I preached from men, but I received it from a revelation, from revelations of Jesus Christ. So Paul had many revelations, but prior to this, all the revelations Paul had, he could tell other people about. He could tell them the content, because it was for their good. It was for their benefit. It was for their help. But now he has this revelation, which he can't share with anybody. Apparently, this revelation was for Paul. It was a revelation that seems for him, and he was not permitted to speak about this revelation. And then on top of all this, to keep him humble, because he had such great revelations, such a great religious experience that no man had ever had, God gave him a thorn. God gave him a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment him, and the literal rendering there means to beat him. He gave him this thorn in the flesh to keep him from becoming boastful and prideful because of what he had seen. What is this thorn in the flesh? When we consider the things that Paul had gone through, and I want us to hear what I'm saying very carefully because I think this is significant. When we consider the things that Paul had gone through for the gospel and was still going through for the gospel, and we talked about the list, in far more labors, and he says far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, etc., etc. When we consider that list that Paul had already gone through and the things he had already suffered, this thorn in the flesh must have been something extraordinary, or he wouldn't have even noticed it. When your man goes through such things like that, and yet you can think of one thing that just sticks out in your mind, it must be extraordinary, or he wouldn't have even noticed it at all. What is this thorn? What is this thorn that Paul had in his flesh? Paul chooses really not to reveal it. He doesn't tell us what it is. But whatever it was extraordinary. You know, normally, when we think of a thorn, we think of something that irritates. You know, I had a thorn in my finger the other day, which got a little bit festered up and infected, and when I put my hand in the pocket, it hurt. It didn't hurt most other times, but when I put my hand in the pocket, of course, it always hurts to put my hand in my pocket. But on those occasions, it really hurt. And because whenever you touch a thorn in the flesh, it aches and it hurts, and we know what that is. But let me tell you, the Greek word for thorn here is the word stake. It's the word stake. Paul's not talking about some minor irritant that only hurts whenever it's touched. He's talking about a stake. A stake in his flesh. He's talking about something that is intense. And that's, he's speaking about something that was a constant source, not just whenever it was touched, a constant source, so profound that when compared to everything else, it stands above it. Now, like I said, only God now knows what this thorn is, because Paul did not tell us what it was. But we do know that it happened about 14 years before he wrote this epistle, which has put the date around 39 or 40, early in Paul's ministry, before he had really gone through a lot of suffering. I'm not saying when I say that Paul didn't know about suffering. Paul had already suffered. For example, Paul had suffered in the very beginning when he heard the gospel. Can you imagine the thoughts that went through his mind and the sorrow that entered his heart whenever he finally realized that Jesus was truly the Christ, the Son of the living God? And Paul had looked into the eyes of Stephen. And he looked into the eyes of other men and women who he compelled to blaspheme so he could imprison them and kill them. And all of a sudden, he realized he was wrong. Can you imagine the anguish of his heart to know what you had put other people through and you were the one that was wrong? Paul had already suffered when he learned who Jesus was. Paul understood this. He understood that he had killed and imprisoned the followers of the Son of God and the servants of the living God. And when he saw the Lord, he understood it all at once. You know, most of us like our pain a little dose at a time. We can swallow a little at a time, it seemed like. But Paul swallowed it whole. He saw that it happened and he cried out, "What would you have me to do, Lord?" And then he takes his medicine at Damascus. Paul was an ambassador of the high priest. Normally, had the high priest ambassador gone to another city, he would have been given all kind of special treatment by the Jews in that city. He would have been treated with respect. But when Paul gets to Damascus, he's no longer an ambassador of the Pharisees. He is a servant of Jesus Christ, and that changes everything. And they become so enraged at him in Damascus that Paul has to sneak out of town over the wall and in a basket. That's where Paul had gotten to because he became a servant of Jesus Christ. And you remember that humility, that humiliation. He remembered that. This is the kind of big man Paul had become. Have to be snuffed out or sneaked out of a city. When he returned to Jerusalem, I feel certain that Paul felt that he could have had an audience with the people who sent him. They had trusted him once. They had given him authority to do some things in their name. And so Paul probably felt, undoubtedly felt, that he was going to get to have an audience with these people. And they were going to say, "Paul, what made you change?" And Paul probably had it in his mind. He would explain to them his vision. He would explain to them what he saw, and they would all be converted. Have you ever had that experience where you thought your family was now going to see everything you had now seen so clearly? But Paul never had the chance to do that. They never called him to ask him to explain to us what happened. Instead, the persecution became so intense against him that the brethren once again had to spirit him out of town ahead of the posse. That was humiliating too. Imagine never having to be able to tell the people who you respected once and people who you loved the gospel because they were so prejudiced against you. Paul knew about suffering. He experienced it from the very beginning. And even though Paul was convinced that the brethren who were trying to get him out of town were wrong, "You know, let me stay. I can tell them the gospel." The Lord finally came to him and said, "Get out. They're not going to listen to you. They're going to try to kill you. Leave." And it was then that Paul left. What was this thorn that Paul had? What was this grievous thing that he had? Was it an illness? A grievous, gruesome illness? Something dragging him down, inhibiting him from reaching out to the lost? You know, I can't imagine, to be honest. I can't imagine that anything we can describe as a thorn in the flesh to the Apostle Paul was not something that was a barrier to his work. Because his work in preaching the gospel was the foremost thing on his mind. And I can't imagine it being anything that would not have to do with hindering him from doing what he was determined to do, preach the gospel, proclaiming the gospel to the lost. There must have been something about this thorn that was making it extremely difficult for Paul to achieve his single heart's ambition to tell the world about Jesus Christ. Some have suggested it was eye disease. Some have said that it was headaches. Some said it was malaria. Some said it was epilepsy. Some said it was a nervous disorder. Eye disease seems to be the favorite among the commentators. And they turn us to Galatians, where in Galatians chapter 4, verses 13, Paul talks about, he says, that you know because of my bodily illness, that which was a trial to you in my bodily condition, you do not despise or loathe. It is possible, he goes on and says, if it were possible, you would have given me your eyes. And they say, well, there, that seems to be a clue. Paul's eyes were bad. And then later on, at the end of the book, he talks about, see how large letters I'm writing. And they say, well, see, he had to have somebody write this epistle for him. And when he wrote, it was big letters because he couldn't see. And that may be right. However, I do want to remind us that in 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 13, when he was in prison, Paul told Timothy to bring the books, to bring the parchments, so he could read still. He wasn't so blind that he couldn't read. But maybe that's the problem. I don't know. Was it some unyielding temptation? Luther and Calvin said it was a spiritual temptation. Augustine and Aquinas said it was a carnal temptation. So we have a spiritual temptation and a carnal temptation. Augustine and Aquinas said it was something inside of him that wanted to answer to some carnal appeal. And he had to fight it every day. It was something that haunted him while he wanted to go out and to preach the gospel, while he wanted to go out and do the right thing, and yet he had to fight against this carnal inclination of some sort. Again, we don't know what it was, but that's what they say it was. Was it something else? Was it a thorn? Because maybe it had to do with the people who he loved rejecting the gospel. Maybe that was it. I know Paul considered a great burden that the people he loved would not accept the gospel. In Romans chapter 9, Paul talks about his desire to be anathema for the sake of his brother. And then in chapter 10, he goes on and he says how much he loved these people, but they were intent on not obeying the gospel. But we see there his heart, that he feels for these people and he loves these people. And maybe that was it. I know I have grieved over my family who are not Christians. And I know a lot of you here have done the same. Well, whatever it was, one thing we do know is that we don't know. But we know whatever it was intense. We know it was intense because Paul prayed 3 times for it to go away. And let me say, it's unlikely that he prayed 3 times in a row for this. You know, a man does not go to God in prayer over something serious like this and then hear God say, no, not now, and then wait only another few minutes to go again. He would wait a while and he would go again in other times of depression and agony, and he would pray again. And we know that Paul prayed 3 times for whatever this was to go away. To go away. So we know whatever it was intense. It was truly a stake in his flesh. It was always there. You know, I'm sure that all of us can identify with a thorn or a stake in the flesh that is anguishing, that is painful, that always seems to be there and is beyond our control. I'm sure we can all have a little bit of understanding about what this is all about. To be involved in a circumstance that's really not very changeable, that's unchangeable. And so we plead to God for help. And I think all of us perhaps have experienced something like that from time to time. It may be some painful or disabling malady. I'm not talking about an occasional headache. I'm talking about something that disables and something that keeps you from being what you want to be, what you could be for the Lord's sake, and we struggle with this. It might be some deep, illicit desire that somewhere down in your soul seeks to respond to the carnal appeal of the world around, and you hate it. You hate it. And you wish that it would go away, that you don't have to fight it every day. And yet it continues. It may be some personal relationship that's a thorn in our flesh. We can easily imagine a marriage. A marriage where one spouse is a source of heartache, where one spouse is bitter, where she or he is harsh, is unkind, having a spouse that is unheeding to any appeal, and every day you must live in intimate contact with that individual. Wouldn't that be a a thorn to live with. Wouldn't that be sadness to live with? And daily you struggle with this carnal impulse to respond in kind. And you wish and you long so much as you think about what might be achieved, if this family were one. And you struggle with this as you think what could have been, what might have been. And you try to be happy and generous, and you try to be godly, and you try to be kind, and you try to be loving, and yet in spite of all things, things don't change. Wouldn't that be a thorn? It may be a child-parent relationship. That's painful. And your children, and you don't get along. The thorn may even be fellow Christians. Fellow Christians. A brother or sister is Christ, who is our nemesis. Who seems to be dedicated to creating misery in our lives. Who puts us down. Who demeans us. Diminishing us in some way. And it goes on and on and on. And we struggle with our feelings, and we don't want to get into a mood like that, and we don't want to be retaliatory. We don't like to flash something back, hear something in your face for that. We don't want to do that, and yet we are constantly provoked by this individual. We feel diminished within ourselves, and we plead to God, help me. Can we sympathize with that? It may be that the people that you want to be saved so badly just won't be saved. That is in the forefront of your mind continually. Your mom, your dad, your sisters, your brothers, your aunts, your uncles, your granny. It's a burden to you, and yet these people are absolutely unheeding. They are unconcerned. They reject your pleas and to turn back to God, and they just continue on their way to perdition. And it's such a burden to bear. It may be other things, but really, just put your own thorn in. Just put your own thorn in. But let me tell you something. What we're concerned about in today's lesson is not what this thorn is. What we're concerned about in today's lesson is how did Paul deal with this? The very fact that he doesn't mention it shows you that he doesn't want us to get carried away by what it is. But how did Paul deal with this thorn? This stake in his flesh? That's what we're interested in. And the first thing I want to bring up is that like Job, Paul did not charge God foolishly. He did not charge God foolishly. He did not come before God and say, don't you want me to do the job you gave me? Why are all these roadblocks being thrown up in front of me? I'm here to do the work, and all that I get is obstacles. All that I get is difficulties. I want to serve you. I want to be all you want me to be. But how can I do that if I just get trouble and trouble and trouble? He didn't do that. So often, when we come across problems like this, we make such accusations. We get some horrible thing happen to us, and we throw it up to God as somehow, you know, that you're not allowing me to be everything I want to be or everything that I could be. And we make this accusation. And I'm sure that all of us have felt like doing this before. It'd be wrong if I said I didn't feel like doing this before, because I have. Things that I want to do that I can't do, I have no ability to do, and what I have the ability to do, I'm sometimes restrained from doing it. And I know how it is. And maybe you do too, in a more intense way. But when we say things like this, it's the edge of bitterness. It's the edge of bitterness in saying those kind of things. There is an edge of accusation to God when we say things like this. We're telling God, if I'm not all that I am to be here, it is because of the circumstance that you put me in. And that's what we're saying. And that's wrong. That's wrong. And Paul never suggested such a thing. But what Paul did say was this. Paul said that God had given him a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to tempt me and to keep me from exalting myself. Some wonder, was it God who gave Paul this thorn? And I would like to tell you, in quoting from what Brother Earnhardt says, or Earnhardt says in some of his stuff, that the devil never intends to help anybody be humble. The devil never intends to teach anybody humility. And so was it the devil that gave him this thorn? Not at all. God gave him this thorn. This was part of the purpose of God, to give him this thorn. It was God's overseeing and tending to this affair. It was God who allowed this messenger of Satan to buffet or to beat Paul because his servant needed something that Satan was able to achieve because of the affliction he gave him. And here again, we need to stand and be in awe at the power of God and His sovereignty, that God is able to use this enemy of His to achieve something good for His servant. Oh no, Satan did not intend for anything good to come from this. I'm sure that Satan was hoping to overthrow Paul's faith in giving him this thorn, of making Paul accuse God. That was his intent, no doubt. But God's intent was to give Paul what he needed. And what did Paul need? He needed to keep humble. He needed to keep from being boastful. And Paul couldn't be everything that he needed to be without that. And that's how we perhaps ought to see some of these thorns that we receive. We pray that they go away, but maybe they're there to help us. God is sovereign. God is sovereign. And God sent the thorn to Paul. God allowed it for the benefit of His servant. That's the reason for it, says Paul. And Paul said, I beg God to be released from it because of his constant pain. And God told me, no. And this is the second thing that we see from Paul. He didn't accuse God falsely, and he appeals to the only one who can really help. And that's God. Like Job, Paul turned to God for help because he knew that whatever the circumstances, whatever the trial, it was his Father who could do something about it. And he believed that his Father cared for him. About that, there was no question that God cared for Paul. This man knew what had happened to him. Paul remembered his past. He was the chief of sinners. He was the chief of sinners, and yet God had been merciful to him. I'm telling you, dear friends and brothers and sisters, Paul never forgot that. Paul never forgot where he came from. And I want to say something else that some of us have. Some of us have forgotten. I don't know what it is in us, whether we have a sort of diminished view of what we have done in the past or what we have recently done as Christians, but somehow or another there is not the deep wellspring of gratitude rising up from within us that says to God, oh, I am so grateful I do not deserve to be here. Paul understood how good God had been to him. And this thorn in the flesh, as bad as it was nothing as compared to what God had saved him from. And he had this gratitude springing from his heart. And he knew that God cared. And he petitioned God out of gratitude. He knew that he was grateful. He knew that he did not deserve to be where he was. And I tell you, none of us deserve to be here and where we are spiritually. But he knew that God was good to him, and he prayed to God. You know, that's what we need to do whenever we are in trials and troubles and whenever we have thorns, stakes to deal with. We need to turn to God in prayer. Paul did this, but I have to say that I don't always do this. I know there are times when I have worried about things, and when I have complained about things, and when I have allowed anxiety to seize the high ground in my life. And I've done all this instead of letting God take over the problem, instead of going to Him and giving it over to His care. Dear brothers and sisters, God cares for us. The Apostle Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 5, beginning in verse 5, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourselves in the sight or under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time, he says, casting all your anxiety upon Him. Why? Because He cares for you. And with this knowledge, we can say with the psalmist, we can say joyfully with the psalmist, in Psalm 46, beginning in verse 1, when he says, God is our refuge and our strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, and though the mountains should slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake at its swelling pride. The Lord, the God of the universe, cares for us. Paul knew that. And he knew it especially through what he had done for him in the Son, by sending the Son to die for him and to save him from a fate far worse than a stake in the flesh. And we know this. God cares for us. And what this ought to do, whenever we are reflecting about this, what this ought to do is cause us to humble ourselves before Him and to do what the psalmist goes on to say in Psalm 46 and 10. He says, cease and know that I am God, and I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted on the earth. And the idea there is to stop worrying when you know who God is. And that's easier said than done. But it's easier done when we know who God is and know that He truly is the Sovereign Lord. Paul tuned into God and turned on to God in prayer. He said, please remove this thorn from me, God. But God's answer was no. I don't like no. I hate no sometimes. But then when I reflect upon things after God has said no and I realize God's not going to allow this to happen, then I reflect upon it, I begin to realize how smart God is. Because sometimes I ask for things that if I had gotten would have been terribly disastrous. And so when God says no to us about something, and I mean about anything, instead of seeing this as a burden, we need to see this as a blessing. That God really knows more about this than you do. And His saying no is a blessing. Is a blessing. How many young men have prayed to marry the sweet young thing at school, to go out with her and then learn later on that this person is not reliable? How many have prayed to marry somebody, a beauty, and then find out this beauty that you had been so intent on has now been married four or five times? You begin to thank God that He didn't answer that prayer. But we need to pray. And when God says no, we need to see this as a blessing. And Paul seemed to do that. Paul's thorn was not going to stop. It went on, and it went on, and God would not remove it from him, but God would let him bear it. God would let him bear this thorn. And this brings us to the next point, that once Paul understood that this was what God was going to have him do, he accepted it. He accepted it and turned what was burdening him into the blessing that God intended. God said, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. Let me tell you something. The Apostle Paul suffered many things. And in the first letter, or second letter to the Corinthians in the first chapter, you just read that sometime and look at all the heartache that Paul reveals that he had gone through there. We don't know all the details, but he had a tough time. Things were about to blow up in Corinth, and he was sending messengers back and forth, and maybe he even went. And things in Ephesus weren't so going so well. He described being in Ephesus as fighting with wild beasts. And he's talking about people. Things weren't going well for him. Things weren't going good for him. But then, he speaks more to the point in 2 Corinthians when he tells us this, beginning in verse 8. In 2 Corinthians 1, verse 8, he says, "We do not want you to be unaware, brethren, of our affliction which came to us in Asia, that we were burdened excessively beyond our strength, so that we despaired even of life. Indeed, we have the sentence of death within ourselves, so that we would not trust in ourselves, but in God who raised the dead." In other words, Paul said, "I was brought so low. I was brought so low that I had no resource whatsoever, and I despaired of life. And something in those desperate circumstances came to me that it was God who gives a life, and I need to keep trusting in Him." And you may say, "You mean Paul, who gave up everything and who counted everything as rubbish, as dung for the sake of knowing Christ, that Paul still needs to learn something to understand that God alone must be his strength and help?" And the answer is yes. Even Paul, as a mature Christian, as an old apostle, still have to learn these lessons. That's what he said. We don't grow up in a second. We don't grow up in a matter of moments. It goes on minute by minute, day by day, week by week, year by year. We grow all the time. And Paul grew. And Paul could say, when he was in prison at Philippi, "I have learned." Paul was an old man. "I have learned something." He was always learning. He was always coming to a greater understanding of the God whom he preached. And we need to learn this too. We need to learn that no matter what happens, that there is something that God wants us to give him that. Let me briefly just remind us of what Paul went through as he got arrested in Caesarea. He was arrested, spent 2 years in jail there. But while in jail, in this prison, he got to preach to Festus. He got to preach to Felix and Drusilla. He got to preach to Agrippa II. But Paul was a man that wanted to preach the gospel everywhere. And so when the Jews wanted to go back to Jerusalem, he said, "No, I want to go to Caesar and get this over with." So he put him on a ship. And on the way there, he gets shipwrecked. And he has to spend the whole winter on an island with a bunch of heathens. And he preaches to them again. Wasn't where he wanted to be, but he took advantage of where he was and preached to them. And then when he gets to Rome, guess what happens? He spends 2 more years under house arrest before he even gets to see Caesar. Now some of us will say, "Man, here's a man that was just made to travel, to go out and preach. What would a man like that do? What would we do? Would we lay on our bed and turn our face to the wall and say, 'Woe is me? How sad I am. This is not what this was not part of the qualifications. I didn't sign up for this.'" Paul didn't do that. Instead, what Paul said when he wrote his letter to the Philippians was this, and I want to read this quickly as we wrap up this lesson. Paul said in the Philippian letter, this is what happened. He says, beginning in verse 12, he said, "I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that my imprisonment for the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and everyone else, and that most of the brethren trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear." Paul said, "No, what had happened to me had turned out for the greater progress of the gospel." Those guards that had to guard him every 4 hours, whenever somebody came in and he began to talk to them, guess who else heard? And Paul said, "The whole Praetorian Guard is aware of what I'm here for." And later on, when he finishes the book, he said, "Those of Caesar's household greet you." Paul took advantage of the situation he was in. You may be in the hospital. And when your friends and family visit and you talk about spiritual things, guess who's going to have to listen? And guess who may get something from it that they need that no doctor on earth can give them? You see, Paul's thorn is not really important to us. What's important is, what did Paul do with it? How did Paul cope with it? And this is how he coped with it. And this is the example he's left for us. When bad things happen to us and things just don't go like they ought to go, and it just seems like life is unfair, we don't have a right to just faint in hopelessness and say, this is it, this is sad, and this is the end of the story. We don't have that right. We are called upon to serve God even then. Do you remember what Satan said to God when he met him before he tempted Job? He says, does Job serve you for nothing? Remember that? Does Job serve you for nothing? And what did Job show Satan? That there are men who serve God for nothing. There's nothing in life that they're serving God for. Everything's been taken away from them, but they still cling to God. The people in the world need to see that today. They need to see people who would serve God even if everything was taken away from them. Because God is worthy to be praised. And Paul and his imprisonment, Paul and his bondage, Paul and all the things he suffered, was still able to convey that to people. And people were listening because they saw in him a man who believed this, a man who understood this, and who lived by what he believed. And that's what we can do too. There are a lot of us here in this place this morning who are suffering great things. Some of our families have been wrecked because of unfaithful spouses. And our lives seem to be in turmoil because of it. And our hearts grieve with you. Some of us are ill with terrible disease. Disease that will not go away, that may take your life. Some of us here have chronic problems that are pain that will just go on and on and on. And we all weep and grieve. But you can be a light like Paul was and show that even in these situations, you will trust in God because God is worthy to be praised, because God has loved us and cared for us and provided for us something far greater than anything we can have here. And we need to hold each other's hands up for this, and you need to help show us the way so when times of suffering comes toward us, like it did with Paul, that we will know that we are not traveling down a road that hadn't been traveled down before. Let us help each other. Let us learn something from the Apostle Paul. And let us rejoice that we have such examples like this in the Word of God. If you're here today and you're subject to the invitation of the gospel, if you are a Christian who has needs our encouragement, needs our prayers because of various things in your life, let us help you. Let us pray with you and for you. Or if you're here today and you've never obeyed the gospel and yet you understand that you need to be a Christian, and you need to believe that Jesus is the Christ, and you say, I do believe, and you need to repent, and you say, I have repented. Well, there's water here, and we're ready to baptize you this very, very minute if you let your desires be known. Please think about this as we stand and sing the final song.